Hello and welcome to the Panorama podcast from the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. My name is Shane Griffin. On this podcast, we sit down with the world's key players in sustainability and look at the action being taken to tackle global challenges. On the pod today, WBCSD's Climate and Energy Managing Director, Maria Mendeluthe, is joined by Chad Frischman, Research Director at Project Drawdown, and Professor Tim Flannery, an acclaimed scientist, explorer, and conservationist. Maria, Chad, and Tim will discuss Project Drawdown. Project Drawdown is said to be the most comprehensive plan ever proposed to reverse global warming. Stick around.
Chad, Tim, welcome. It's great to have you with us today in this Panorama studio. Many thanks for sitting down with me to talk through the best-selling environmental book of 2017, Project Drawdown, the most comprehensive plan ever proposed to reverse global warming. I look forward to exploring with you some of the solutions proposed in the book and provide some food for thought for our member companies on how they can contribute to scaling up some of the solutions. So let me start with you, Chad. In a nutshell, can you explain us what this Project Drawdown is about?
Well, first of all, thank you, Maria, for having me here today. So Project Drawdown is essentially a reframing of the way we approach global warming and climate change. For 25 years, we've focused on brilliant science around the problem and the effect, global warming, climate change. Climate change is just the feedback of the problem. What Project Drawdown tries to do is we need to focus on the solutions, the math to solve the problem at hand. And I think that's why it's unique. And it's also unique not only because it's focusing on solutions, but focusing on a broad, comprehensive array of technologies and practices that we know how to do. Across sectors from energy, land use, women and girls empowerment, transportation, buildings, materials. When we look at these as an integrated system together, we can see a pathway forward where reversing global warming is possible.
That's fantastic. So you have 100 solutions. You have run a number of numbers around the investment, return, and mitigation potential of each solution. But can you tell us which one is the one that you like the most? What is the top solution first? And then which one is more close to your heart? Which one is the one that you think, well, this is it, this is the solution?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say none of them are my favorite. They all are my favorite solutions. And that's because we need all 80 of them in order to be adopted in parallel to achieve drawdown. Now, just to be clear, drawdown is that point when we start to take out reduce atmospheric concentrations of greenhouse gases on an annual basis. It's that point when you start to decline. And that's where reversing global warming is possible. But the number one solution is rather surprising. It's refrigerant management. Now, we weren't expecting that necessarily. We wanted something a little bit more exciting, perhaps a little sexier than refrigerant management. Though I will tell you, we've had so many refrigerant association members calling us saying we've been saying that for years. Now, why is that the case? Because of hydrofluorocarbons. We did a great job with the Montreal Protocol in banning chlorofluorocarbons because of their ozone effect. Well, we replaced them with hydrofluorocarbons, HFCs, which have hundreds or thousands of times more potent greenhouse gases than carbon dioxide. And so we proposed, what if we were to limit leakage across the lifetime, and then at the end of life, instead of throwing away in landfills our air conditioners and refrigerators and everything else, we're allowing them to leak into the atmosphere. What if we destroy those HFCs at the end of life? What could be the potential impact? And it turns out when we convert it to carbon dioxide equivalent HFCs, it's roughly 90 gigatons avoided from just the destruction at end of life. Now, that does not include the Kigali Agreement, which is an amendment to the Montreal Protocol. And what this states is it's a phase out of hydrofluorocarbons globally, right? And if we were to add that phase out in production of HFCs, refrigerants would leap to approximately 160 gigatons avoided over 30 years. And if we sped up that process and phased out by 2020 hydrofluorocarbons, which we can do, we have natural alternatives, we could have, avoid over 200, potentially over 200 gigatons in the atmosphere. So an astounding solution. But that's the number one. But of course, we were also surprised with the food system. When you look at our top 20 solutions, which is based on total avoided emissions or sequestration potential over 30 years, only five are based on electricity generation, We think, first thing we think of, oil, coal, gas, and it's clearly the highest emitter. But in terms of actual solutions, only 5 in the top 20 are from the electricity generation. 8 of the top 20 are from the food system. How we produce our food, how we consume it, and how we waste it turns out to have the most substantive impacts in achieving drawdown in 30 years.
Tell us more about these food solutions and also those that relate to nature climate solutions. What do they bring and how easy they can be deployed, those solutions?
Well, again, there are 8 of in the top 20, but there are over 20 or more land use and food system solutions. And I think what's really essential is to understand there are 3 mechanisms to achieve drawdown, 3 types, 3 ways to do this through different technologies and practices. One is a replacement of existing fossil fuel-based energy generation with renewable sources. A reduction, 2 is a reduction in consumption through behavior change and technological efficiencies. 3rd is biosequestering carbon in our plants, biomass, and soils through a process we know is a photosynthesis, right? We all learn about this in grade school. So those 3 mechanisms allow us to achieve drawdown. We cannot achieve drawdown. Now, drawdown is when we take out of the atmosphere, right? We reduce without biosequestration. And that means land use. That means agricultural solutions. That means how we protect and conserve our ecosystems, wetlands, peatlands, forests. These are incredibly important ecosystems that not only have intrinsic value and biodiversity, but also are carbon sinks. They safeguard carbon from being released into the atmosphere. And we need to protect and preserve those. But we also need to transform the way we do business in agriculture. Agriculture now is a net emitter of carbon. And we have processes through regenerative processes, and we have, you know, quite a few, over 17, I believe, agricultural solutions that are regenerative in nature. And what this does is it increases soil organic carbon. And the result of that is increased soil health and fertility, increased yield, water retention improves, sustainable livelihoods of smallholder farmers. And of course, actually, financial return for large-scale farming operations as well. When you look at this as an entire integrated system as a whole, our production for land use, but also our consumption patterns, right? So what we consume, how we choose to reduce our overconsumption and lower our consumption of animal-based proteins. The combination of this and reduced waste and regenerative agricultural systems, we actually produce enough food today, if we did all of that together, enough food today to feed the world's population all over, throughout the world, now until 2050, including population growth.
That's impressive, Chad. Let me move to you, Tim. We know that you have been doing quite a lot of research, substantial research, on the role of carbon negative technologies. What does the research community say about those? What is the role?
Well, Chad is quite right in identifying those carbon negative technologies as an essential part of drawdown now. So we can't stabilize our climate system without deploying them. So it's very important that we reduce our emissions. It's very important we become more efficient. But we also need some way of drawing CO2 out of the atmosphere at scale. And that is the big, big thing, because the scale is enormous when you look at it. Just to give you an example of how big it is, if we thought, let's just try to draw down 10% of humanity's global emissions by planting trees, is something we all understand. How big an area would we need to cover? We would need to cover all of the United States in forest to draw down just 10% of our current annual emissions. So we are becoming quite inventive as we look for solutions in this area, beyond the land, into the oceans. The oceans cover 71% of the planet. Seaweed grows 30 to 60 times faster than land-based crops and plants. Seaweed's already a very valuable industry, seaweed growing. So we are looking at the oceans for some really scalable solutions. Having said that, it'll be a bit like the development of the wind and solar industry, I think. It will be several decades before we get to scale with any of these solutions.
And with that parallel, do you think it will take, we know that wind onshore took faster than offshore. Do you see the same with the ocean solutions?
Indeed, because what we see with the ocean solutions is that mostly the work that's being done at the moment is near shore, which allows us to very efficiently capture carbon from the atmosphere, but we have no storage mechanism for that carbon that's captured in seaweed. In order to have a storage mechanism, we have to move those seaweed farms offshore into deep waters where the seaweed can fall down a kilometre or so into the ocean depths. And once it's down there, it is geologically sequestered. It's sequestered long time. And I think the tax credits in the recent US budget are going to be very important in helping to achieve those sort of goals. That $50 a tonne for geological sequestration of carbon is a very important incentive.
Okay, so Project Drawdown, what is next?
Well, one of the things that is next is we've built a global systems model that looks at global markets and food systems and land use. We are just about to embark on a new module for oceans, for marine-based technologies and practices. In fact, we have two coming attractions, marine permaculture and ocean farming, that are presented in the book. So we'd love to talk to you more about that. But Project Drawdown is a living research program and communications organization. We don't stop with this book that was published in April of 2017. We've continued our research. We refined our methods and models. We're in the process now of creating an integrated software platform that will allow researchers and institutions from around the world to take part and contribute to the democratization of our approach and model throughout the world. So we can actually create a system where local can communicate to global and back and forth. We are also working on the second edition of the book Drawdown, which will be released next year. We have several other subject-based books, including a book on Drawdown Oceans, which we hope to launch. Essentially what we're trying to do here is reframe the way we present and see these solutions from just focusing on the technical assessment and research and make it accessible to the broadest audiences. And so all of the work that we're doing, including a documentary, a TV series, short form videos, etc., Drawdown Learn, which is about curriculum development in K-12, all of this is being initiated. And some of it is with Project Drawdown, but some of it is also with our partners, because what we're trying to create is a coalition of an ecosystem where partners from around the world are sparking and taking on self-organized approaches to what the concept of Drawdown and making and turning it into action. I'm here actually in Europe, not only for this great event here in Geneva, but also for the launch of Drawdown Europe, which was launched last week in Berlin, to great success. And this is a collaborative effort between the European Climate Foundation, German Energy Agency, and climate knowledge and innovation communities, Climate Kick. They're creating a backbone of organization, which is a replication of our model in the European context. We're also the similar organizations in Drawdown Canada, Drawdown Australia, Drawdown New Zealand, at the country scale, the municipal scale, Drawdown Toronto, Drawdown Marin, Drawdown Chicago, sparking everywhere. And so we want to create the conditions for that ecosystem to thrive and let it go, to democratize.
And I cannot help myself asking you this question. How are you going to involve business on Project Drawdown?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, already there are some 200 companies from around the world that want to take Drawdown as a new form of responsibility to commit to Drawdown. And it includes some major corporations, but also companies at all scales. And I think this is going to be an increasingly important part of our coalition efforts, the ecosystem that's forming, and what we say to them is, they ask us all the time, well, what do we do? How do we get to Drawdown? We say we don't know, because how a company looks across its supply chain to figure out, how they can best integrate these solutions to achieve Drawdown is something they need to do themselves. But the starting point, they have to commit to the concept and understand that reversing global warming is the future that we want. It's the vision that we want. It's the goal that we all need to work towards. And I think that starting point, that spark, will let them figure out exactly how they can contribute to the system.
Thank you, Chad. What about you, Tim? How do you think you can involve more business in the work that you're doing on negative emissions on the ocean?
Well, look, I think it's important for business people to understand that the carbon we put into the atmosphere today, half of it lasts a century and a quarter of it lasts forever, unless we draw it down. And we all are aware in business and the world that emitting that carbon has a cost. What we don't see as clearly, I think, is that if you have an approach or a method which can draw some of that carbon out of the atmosphere, that has value. Because over coming decades, we will see a significant worsening of the climate crisis. The climate system has enormous inertia. So even the CO2 in the air now will drive ever worse consequences for several decades. So if I was a young entrepreneur or a business person looking at carbon, I'd be looking at that CO2 in the atmosphere as much as an opportunity as a threat.
That's an interesting thought to conclude this podcast. Chad, Tim, thank you very much for joining us with Panorama Podcast. To our listeners, if you would like more information of any of these subjects, visit wpcsd.org. And please don't forget to subscribe and to rate the Panorama Podcast on iTunes. We look forward to joining us again next time. Thank you very much.